What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you into episode 2 of Meet Me at Mutual. I am Daniel Shoptoff from C70 at the Bat, and with me is John Nagel of Cardinals Farm fame. John, how are you tonight?
I'm good, Daniel. How are you?
Doing well. Cardinals are playing as we talk. Cardinals are winning at the moment, but we're going to do our best, and I say this every time I do a podcast at the same time as the Cardinals, we're going to do our best not to talk about what's going on in the game. And then it always tends to happen. We're talking about what happens in the game. But we're going to do our best to kind of ignore that right now, put it on the shelf, because we've got some other things to talk about. So let's just jump right in to the Redbird Rewind.
He's got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
All right, this was a mixed bag week. Cardinals went 1-2 against Pittsburgh, then swept the Angels in a slugfest of a series. John, out of this week, what really stood out for you?
I think the first thing is how bad the Angels are. I mean, it's kind of hard to see when you have, you know, Mike Trout and, you know, Albert. I mean, he's declining, obviously, but still, you have two superstars on that team, and yet I might be able to go out there and throw a few innings for them.
They have definitely lost a lot. Of course, their ace went down to Tommy John. They've lost another couple pitchers, I know. It has been a struggle for them. But, you know, then on the flip side of that, the Cardinals, you know, send their ace out there in that last game, and he gives up 7 runs. Maybe that should be like 14 runs against a real team.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think we talked about it last week, the struggles of Adam Wainwright. And, you know, you hoped, it was nice to see them beat up on bad, you know, bad team again, but that last one was a little rough one to watch.
Yeah, that was, and I, if you stayed up for it, I'd be really impressed since you got an hour on me, but I know I'd gone to bed at the end of it. They were up, I don't know, it may have been the 12-7 at that time. I'm not sure if it was even that much, but it seemed like it was well in hand. And then not only did Wainwright, of course, struggle, but then we saw Seth Maness and Trevor Rosenthal. Rosenthal struggled a lot this week, and that's something that we'll talk about at some point in time in this show. But Seth Maness, again, just kind of got lit up. And so tonight, the Cardinals send him to Memphis and bring up Dean Kickheffer. You will correct me because you know more about him than I do, so I may be slaughtering that name. Why don't you tell us a little bit about our newest Cardinal?
Sure. He's almost 27 years old. He's been with the Cardinals for quite a while. He was originally drafted in the 36th round in 2010 out of the University of Louisville. He's been with the Cardinals since then, 2010. He's worked his way up. He's been with Memphis. This would be his second full season with Memphis. Third partial season. 2014, he split with Springfield and Memphis, majority of Memphis, and he's a tough lefty. And, you know, I tweeted out that he's going to have some opportunities, I think, this series facing Corey Seager and Adrian Gonzalez and Jock Peterson. So it might be a good little test for him to start out. But he's, you know, we talked about it last week. The Cardinals like to reward guys who are performing pretty well in the minor leagues. And he's done that over the past, but especially this season, you know, over 13 and a third innings, he hasn't walked anyone. And I think that's kind of, we just talked about Trevor Rosenthal. I think that's what they're looking for. You know, maybe not so much the strikeouts, but definitely consistency.
Yeah, it seems to me, and you'll correct me again if I'm wrong, he may fit more into what we consider that traditional Loogie-type role more than, obviously, Kevin Sechrist and Tyler Lyons do. I mean, do you think that's the way that they're typically going to use him while he's up?
I think so. And you know, I've been a Dean Kike for, I don't know how you say it, I'm right there with you, fan for a couple years. You know, I've kind of thought of him as the heir apparent Loogie, if we'll call him that, after Randy Choate. You know, thinking that, you know, he's tough on lefties, and you know, this season at Memphis, and granted it's a smaller sample, but he's, you know, lefties are 2-for-19 against him, and those two hits are singles. The thing I was looking at earlier is, you know, he'll give up some hits to lefties. I mean, he's pretty consistent, but he doesn't give up big hits. And I think that's, you know, he'll give up singles, maybe not good contact. They're making good contact against him. So I think that's going to be his role. I would imagine, you know, he's not going to, you know, that's Kevin Seager's job to get more outs, you know, from the left side. So he might be that one or two out guy.
Yeah, I pulled up looking at his splits from last year. Of course, that'll give you a little bit more innings. And, you know, he gave up, it looks like, four earned runs and 23 and a third against left-handers, but no homers.
Right.
So that's – and, you know, gave up five long balls to righties in more innings. He had a 154 ERA against left-handers, which I'm not sure how much ERA – against them, but against lefties or righties matters, but
right.
A 267 average against for them. So, yeah, he's definitely going to be a guy that looks like he can come in and get some left-handed hitters out. And like you say, this series, he may get some trial by fire to do that. And there are some strong lefties in the division that he might get a chance to face as well. You know, Seth Maness has struggled, as we've talked, I think we talked about last week, for the last couple of years. And while he had an outing or two recently that maybe you thought he was getting back on a little bit, at least reasonable bandwagon, he just struggled so much in the last outing that they sent him to Memphis. And in fact, they're talking about him being a starter in Memphis just to make sure he can pitch innings on a regular basis and a lot of them. It seems like an interesting path for them to take with him.
You know, I've mentioned this several times recently on Twitter, is that, you know, I would love to see what he can do stretching out, just because, you know, I feel like he's a pitch-to-contact pitcher, and I don't think a short relief is necessarily where you would want that. You know, he's got – seems like to have a pretty good repertoire of pitches that is suitable for a starter, and it's not working out, you know, out of the bullpen. And you know, we can look at, his ERAs over the you know, his career, and you go from 2.32 in 2013, 2.91, 4.26, and then 6.39. So, you know, he struggled in spring, but I was looking at, you know, his career, that he's not improving. And so I like the idea of a change for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's just – he has scuffled for a while now. It's not just that he's had one or two bad games. He has really – he's gone a long way from that, you know, double play specialist that we saw as he first came up. It seems like the league has adjusted to him, and whether he can adjust back is a different story. And it's a situation where – you know, I know a lot of the times they say, well, he needs to pitch regularly to keep, you know, to get enough innings on his arm to maybe make that sinker sink a little bit more. But if you can't pitch well, you're not going to get
right.
a chance to pitch those innings.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he needs, you know, he needs every fifth day, go out there and throw, you know, build up to 80, 90 pitches and see what happens. He, you know, we talked last week about the lack of starting pitching depth in the minor leagues with, you know, Marco Gonzalez and Tim Cooney out. Maybe he's a guy who can build up some strength. He can have, you know, strong starts, and, you know, maybe if there's a need, he can come back and start a few games.
It would be interesting. Definitely not what we would have expected
No.
just a few weeks ago, but you're right. It's very good.
Yeah. or what we would want. We wouldn't, you know, Seth Maness starting games for us would not be ideal.
This is true. We hope it doesn't come to that. There's a reason you can start him in Memphis. Those games don't count quite as much. So, right. Yeah, it's just, it becomes difficult to somewhat see him making his way back up. But like you said, maybe he gets on a run down in Memphis and we see him again. But it almost has that Mitchell Boggs type feel of a guy that just kind of, you know, kind of quickly started downhill and never really recovered.
And I think, you know, going back to the, he's not a strikeout pitcher, and I think that's going to be his downfall, especially when you have Kiefer or whatever, and, you know, Sam Tuivalala, who's getting close. You know, he's walking too many hitters right now, but you got some strong arms down there, and you're right, he could quickly get lost in the mix.
Like I say, lots of offense this week, not so much against Pittsburgh, but definitely against Anaheim. And again, take it with whatever grains of salt. But it was still kind of nice to see guys like Matt Holliday and Matt Carpenter and even Matt Adams and others have some big games and maybe get a little bit of confidence as they go into a series, this series with the Dodgers. That's a team that's a little bit better than what they've been facing.
Right, and, you know, it's going to be tough for them to, you know, we talked about it last week, the whole beating up on the bad teams, mm-hmm. and that's what they did against the Angels, and you got to do that. You know, good teams do that. But again, now we get, you know, some good competition here against the other Los Angeles team, and we'll see how it goes. And we'll see how the bats compare against, you know, luckily we get to miss Clayton Kershaw, so, you know, and the Dodgers pitching is not what it's been either, so we'll see if they can take advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, well, like tonight, you're facing a rookie pitcher. I think they're facing, I'm not sure who they're facing tomorrow night, and then Alex Wood on Sunday, who's not a guy that's established as well. I mean, this is not the, you know, the gauntlet that they had to run the last few years where you faced Kershaw, and then you faced Greinke, and then who else. It's definitely a different rotation now, and but that doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem to matter too much about who they face. If the team's over right. 500, they have trouble with them. so it's, you're right. I think this is a big weekend because the Dodgers, you know, the Dodgers are what, 18-17 or something like that going into this, series. So they're not setting the world on fire, but they're a good team. And it's a team that the Cardinals should play with, and hopefully, you know, win 2 out of 3.
Right.
But, you know, that doesn't, what should and what does happen have been two different things this year.
Right.
I guess it's tough to lose so far now, well, 5 of 6 to Pittsburgh, because if you factor out the Cubs, and we don't want to do that too much because it's still semi-early, although we're hitting the quarter mark here pretty soon, you know, the Cubs have that 7-game lead now. But Pittsburgh may be the team that you're really fighting with for that wild card spot. To have such a deficit against a team that you really need to be beating, that may come back and haunt them somewhere along the way.
Yeah, you know the old saying or whatever, you got to beat up on teams in your division too. And we've seen, you know, like you said, struggle with the Cubs and the Pirates. And you know, you gotta take care of business, you know, in your own division. And right now they're not doing that. So you know, you said it's early. Let's give them some more time, but it's a cause for concern for sure.
As Yogi Berra said about the West Coast, it gets late early
late
out
early,
there,
yeah.
And that may be what this division does. It may get late early if the Cubs continue to win like they have been. Now somehow they lost a doubleheader to the Padres this week, so
yeah.
Perhaps they are human. But you know, then they come out and beat up on a Pirates team that the Cardinals have obviously had trouble with mm-hmm. today. So. It becomes frustrating. And I know the Cardinals have been on the other side of that in the past few years where they would win yep. and win and win and teams couldn't catch up with them. But it's kind of tough to look up just about every time you see the Cubs put up 4 or 5 runs in the early going and know that they're probably on their way to another win.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's this week in Cardinal baseball, if you will. And we'll now transition to our big topic up the middle.
Alessandro, the second for one, the double play. What a double play by Ozzie Smith. Oh, mercy.
All right, we're going to talk today about the idea that this Cardinal team may not be the Cardinal team that we thought it was being, and that it may just be a 500 or around that type of team. John, it just seems like this team just can't get momentum, and obviously they won three against the Angels right now. Maybe kind of got, you think, got to get their wheels under them, but now as I glance at the score, it's 3-1 Dodgers. And right now it seems like that momentum may not have gone very far. Is this what we're going to see? Is this the new normal of just maybe two or three games over 500 is about as far as they're going to be able to do?
I don't think so. I think, you know, we're still fighting some injuries with Johnny Peralta out. And, you know, Adam Wainwright's not who he's supposed to be. You know, we got a good start out of Mike Leake, but he hasn't been very solid. I don't think we should expect 500. That being said, I don't know how much more, you know, what the ceiling is for this team. Is it 10 games over 500? You know, that would put them at what? That would be what? 85? Yeah.
86 wins.
Yeah, so maybe around there, 86 to 90. But that, you know, that means they're going to have to pick it up a little bit here. I don't think we're a 500 team just yet. Let's go in June and see where we're at then. I don't, what do you think, Daniel?
You know, I feel like there's enough talent on this team.
Right.
That there shouldn't be, they should be definitely be better than this. But I just haven't seen necessarily a whole lot of evidence. You know, right now, as I do the calculation, right now they're on pace for 88 wins. But that's a little bit, you know, that's a little bit skewed because 3 games ago they were on pace for 81.
Right.
I feel like they just can't ever seem to get their legs under them. And something always, I think if, you know, if it was the fact that they weren't hitting or maybe if they weren't pitching, you know, maybe you say, okay, John Mozeliak can go out and maybe fix something here and there. But it just seems like on any given day something else is going to go wrong, whether it's the defense, whether it's the hitting. And their inability, as we talked about earlier, to play against those bigger teams. I don't want to write them off, and I'm not going to write them off. You look at last year in Pittsburgh about this time was struggling around 500, and obviously they caught fire and won 97 games. So it's possible that this team will do that, but it just doesn't, it has a feel to it. That just doesn't seem to be there. It doesn't seem like, and maybe it would be different if they're losing a lot of close games and you figure it's going to turn around. But, you know, it's just this, like I say, the inability. You beat up on the bad teams and then you just look so mortal against teams that are 500 or better. It, again, I don't want to sound negative, but it just doesn't feel like the Cardinal teams that we've seen in the last few years.
Right, and you know, I just talked about injuries, and it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's Johnny Peralta, and you know, Ledesma Diaz is he's done really well. So, you know, even though there's that there, you know, there haven't been too many injuries. Mm-hmm. So that's something that goes along with your point there, that there's not one thing that's, oh, that's the problem. And you know, thinking about what area they would upgrade if they were to make a deal, I don't know where you would go. I mean, you know, starting pitching has struggled, but I don't see an opening. You can't make a move there. And, you know, something else to think about that may be in the Cardinals' favor in down the line here as we get through the summer is the depth. You know, we got a pretty good depth offensively, and that might come into play. You know, as other teams, as injuries start to develop, you know, the Cardinals are in a better position maybe down the stretch to make some improvements. But It is frustrating to see that is not one thing. You're not losing close games. You're not, you know, you're not rattled with injuries. And it's they, you know, they win three in a row against the Angels and you know, come out struggling tonight. You know, hopefully we can turn around. But it is frustrating for sure.
Yeah, and to some degree, it's almost that baseball's way of evening the books. I mean, the Cardinals mm-hmm. had so many injuries last year and they still won 100 games.
Right.
You know, it is maybe that baseball, like I say, balancing things out to have a team that looks healthy, like you say, except for Peralta, and the Peralta's, you know, replacement has done as much or more than what Peralta probably would have done, at least offensively.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
You know, to say that, but you know, again, to go to your point, you know, if you get a Wainwright on online and you get you know, leak going, and you get walk. You know, if that rotation starts to be the rotation that we think it's going to be, I mean, and you put this offense that has is significantly better than we expected it to be, at least most of the time,
right,
with a pitching staff that should shut people down, and you can make up a lot of ground in a hurry. But I think you just want to see that, and especially with Wainwright, I think that's probably one of the bellwethers of this team. As he goes, oh, how's this team going? And it's that was the way with Chris Carpenter, except that was, you know, if Chris Carpenter was healthy, the team would do well, and if Chris Carpenter was hurt, they typically didn't. Wainwright's out there, but you know, it looked like the time before last, he kind of got everything figured out. He pitched a very good game. And then, like I say, last night he goes out there and gives up 7 to the Angels team that, as we've talked about, is not that good. You hate to see that. So again, he says he's going to put everything behind him, make a fresh start, and go forward. But you know, ball players say that all the time, and they don't really get to choose sometimes how that start is.
Right, and you know, we talked about this last week with Wainwright. You know, his strikeouts. Watch his strikeouts and see. You know, the higher his strikeouts, probably the better he's going to be. Last night he had 3, I think,
mm-hmm.
3 over 5 innings, and that's, you know, that's not ideal at all. So, you know, he's saying the right things, of course. He knows what to say. So, you know, he's working hard. He's going to make some adjustments, and hopefully they pay off.
Yeah, and I mean, I listened to his interview with Derek Gould. Derek put on his best podcast in baseball, one of those shorts. And, you know, it does sound, I mean, he does have some reasonable I don't want to say excuses, but reasons for this. You know, the muscle memory is not necessarily there. He's still got to learn how to, you know, get back to it after a year. But, you know, he said, okay, I think we figured it out. And I said, it obviously hasn't, or at least not yet. And that's just huge. I mean, even if you got a Wainwright, you know, Wainwright's got a 6.80 ERA. If Wainwright has a 4 ERA, you know, we're still wondering what's wrong with him, but, you know, things are probably a bit better, even though I think Bernie Mikolas pointed out the Cardinals have won like you know, 4 or 5 of his 8 starts. I'm not sure exactly where he's at now, but they've won a number of them, even though Wainwright hasn't, because he's gotten a ton of run support. I think this team has always been a at least recently pitching first team, and if the pitching was there, I think I'd feel a lot better about them making a run. We're just not seeing it.
Right, I agree, and you know, I think you mentioned Wainwright being the factor. I think the whole pitching is going to be the factor. If they can turn it around, I think we'll be in good shape.
You know, like I said, and there are obviously a lot of positive points. It would be nice to see a little bit better defense at times. That has really come back and bitten the Cardinals and this team. You know, I think we talked about this as well last week, where a team that's, you know, known for gold gloves is just leading the team at league in errors, and that's something that's hard for us as Cardinal fans to wrap our heads around as well. We're not used to every ball being hit to shortstop or somewhere in the infield becoming an adventure, and that's got to be tightened up somehow, and I don't know how you do it. Unless it's Johnny Peralta returning, and I don't think, you know, if you said three
right.
years ago, hey, Johnny Peralta is going to come back and help our defense, nobody would believe you. But Peralta has played a very solid shortstop since he's been in St. Louis.
You have to wonder how much of an effect Jose Oquendo plays. You know, you hope it's not that much. You mm-hmm. hope these guys are strong defensively with or without him. But you know, he was the infield. You know, the infield coach. And then, you know, earlier tonight we saw a base running blunder. So, you know, you have to wonder if that's playing into it, any of it.
It probably is a little bit. You know, I think for some people have overstated
right.
Oquendo's, you know, because like I said, it's like Oquendo was this, you know, guy holding all the strings. And so, as soon as he's gone, they all fall apart.
Right.
You know, these are guys, you know, like Diaz and others that may not have ever worked with Oquendo, but some
right.
of these guys have worked with him for a number of years. They should know
right.
the drill.
Right.
You know, but that said, positioning can be a huge thing. I mean, you know, a step in the right direction can be the difference between an error or a base hit going through or something of that nature. So, you know, if he's doing some positioning or has some ideas there, you know, it's possible that his influence is being felt negatively throughout the infield, especially. It's very, like you say, very hard to tell, you know, something like that. But I guess if next year he comes back and they start catching everything in sight, then we'll know.
I think Diaz is an interesting case because he's, you know, a younger guy. I mean, he's not young for a prospect, but as far as major league experience, and you wonder how much of an influence Oquendo would have had on him. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if he worked with them in spring or, you know, I'm sure he's worked with them, you know, maybe a little bit last year in the minor leagues and spring training and whatnot. But you know, he seems to be one of the bigger, I guess, weaknesses defensively. You know, although I guess lately, you know, he had an error tonight. But you know, over the last, I don't know how many, 10 games or so, he made one error maybe. Mm-hmm. So he's getting a little better. But you wonder if maybe something there. But I think you're right. I think we're maybe putting too much into that.
Yeah, but that's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about how Oquendo might be able to connect with Diaz in that way. And you know, again, it may just be, hey, approach it this way, approach it that way. Mm-hmm. And you got to figure Oquendo is probably still having
right.
some impact.
Right.
I mean, he's not on the field.
Right.
He's probably not around he may not be around the ballpark right now after just coming off that knee surgery. But, you know, I'm sure he's texting the players. I'm sure he's still giving some insights. It's not like he's, you know, disappeared off the face of the earth or anything.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, again, there are reasons to think that this team could turn it around. There are reasons to think we're kind of stuck in this pattern. It's just that we get to, it's been a while since we've gotten to, you know, mid-May and seen a team still struggling around that 500 mark. Now, it's not unheard of. I think there were some Tony La Russa teams that did that and finally started putting those, you know, 5 games over 500, 10 games over 500, you know, pushing there at the end. But I don't know that we have the confidence in this team and, to be fair, this manager to think that that's going to happen down the stretch this year.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you.
All right. I think we've beaten that one together. So let us shift to happier things. Let's go ahead and talk about the futures report.
0-1 to Pujols. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering 3-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
All right, John, I know that you have another, I believe you have another outfielder for us to talk about this week. Talked about Harrison Bader last week. Who this week?
I want to talk about Paul DeJong. Kind of, he fits, I think it may be a little unfair to tie him with Harrison Bader, but, you know, they may be tied together for a while just because they're both early round picks in the last year's draft, 2015 draft. You know, we talked about Bader, third round. DeJong was fourth round. Both college bats, Bader from the University of Florida, DeJong, a little smaller school, Illinois State, but both big-time hitters. And I think earlier in the week we talked, Daniel, and I don't remember how it came up, but, you know, I said, you know, I think Paul DeJong has one of the best bats in the minor league system, and that is including Harrison Bader and McNury Sierra, you know, Edmundo Sosa. I like DeJong's bat probably better than the latter two, and maybe a little bit more than Bader. Defensively, he's playing third base for Springfield. You know, coming into professional ball, he was, I believe, he caught in college. You know, that's something they're obviously not looking at. But he's had some experience at other positions, and he's on a tear with Springfield. He started out pretty slow, but he's picking it up in May. He's got a 1.333 OPS over 40 at-bats. That includes 6 home runs in May so far, a 350 average, 875 slugging. 875 slugging, that's pretty impressive. He's on fire, and it's nice to see. That slow start, you know, he made the jump from low-A Peoria to double-A Springfield. That's a pretty tough jump, but it's nice to see him start to see some success so far.
Yeah, I don't know why. I thought, I guess because of Bader, I had assumed he was an outfielder. I did not realize he's third base, so this is showing my ignorance. But, yeah, I think, in fact, I want to say, what, yesterday or the day before, he won a game with a walk-off home run.
Yeah, last night. Yep.
Yeah, and he's raised his batting average like you were talking about, he was hitting well under 200 not too long ago, and now he's hitting 250. And has a, you know, August 2nd is his birthday, which is the same as mine. Just the fact that he was born after I graduated high school, just would put that away from the other side. But he's a guy, like you said, he's a guy that's going to be very interesting to see. And you know, we talk about hitters. I think sometimes we just talk about whether they're a good hitter or not. But, you know, he may be the more of the power bat. I don't want to say a Brandon Moss type because I don't. I think you're probably going to say he's better average and going to make more contact than that. But he may be more in that vein, whereas Bader may be more of an all-around guy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think DeJong is going to be more of an impact bat right away. He may be stuck at third base, and whereas you know Harrison Bader can play all three outfield positions. I don't know if DeJong if he could handle second or first, you know, that might be something they start exploring soon now that he seems to have righted the ship with the bat. But he's an impressive hitter for sure. In April, he had 32 strikeouts over 20 games, not ideal. He's kind of cut those down, with 10 in 11 games in May. So that's a good sign to see. And, you know, he's going to see time, I think, in Memphis before the season's over.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that was playing, you know, what, college ball this time last year, right?
Right.
I mean, finishing up, and now he's at Double A. I mean, that's a pretty good run. And so it's not too surprising that he struggled somewhat, but it's very encouraging to see how the bat has come around over the last month.
Yeah, he's pretty young for his level. He's 22. He'll turn 23 in August. And you're right. He this time last year he was hitting with the aluminum bats, in the Missouri Valley, I guess. I don't know if they still call it that, but, you know, he probably made a few trips, you know, at Hammonds Field in Springfield playing against Missouri State. So he's making adjustments. You know, last year he wasn't properly placed at the start of the season. He was with Johnson City, which is more for rookie level, and he just tore that up over 10 games, quickly moved him to Peoria. And he did okay. And so, you know, they saw enough in him to make the jump. Him and Bader made the jump. I love to see the aggressive moves that the Cardinals made with some of these prospects, and it's paying off with those two. And, you know, we talked about Bader last week with, you know, kind of a rough time frame for him. And I think with DeJong, I think it depends, again, like we said last week, on injuries as far as when he can get the call. But his bat may help him, you know, get a quicker call than Bader, but, it may be a September thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, like you say, he's playing third base right now. Of course, that's Carpenter's spot.
Right.
But, you know, Carpenter does have the flexibility to move over to second or first or whatever if that's necessary. And that would be an issue, although we're going to talk a little bit about from some of our Twitter questions about some of the juggling that this team might have to do anyway. So it might be the bat might play, but finding him a spot may be a little bit difficult.
And that's a good problem to have. If we can, you know, if Diaz keeps hitting and, we have Johnny Peralta coming back, you know, we're going to have a good problem on our hands. And so if DeJong has to stay in the minor leagues, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, he's going to turn 23. I mean, it's not unheard of. I mean, it's not like they're slowing his development at all him down and start even next year that way. You mentioned his rookie level. Wow, you're right. Those numbers were insane. 10 games and he hit .486. Slug .973. I mean, 4 homers in 10 games. There's a reason they moved him up. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, him and Bader, actually, I believe, got moved up on the same day last year. Now, Bader started at a level above him at State College, but I think on the same day or maybe within a day or two, they moved them both up to Peoria, and that's kind of where they're, you know, started to become linked together. So throw that with, you know, being drafted close together, you know, probably unfairly because they play different positions, have different skill sets. Those guys are going to be tied together.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I guess until his death, the Tavares and Piscotty seemed to always be in the same sentences, even though they were very different type of players, same levels and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. You have the better hitter, Tavares and DeJong, and you know, and maybe a little better all around Piscotty and Bader. Although, you know, Bader's a better defender than Piscotty would be, but you're right. It's an unfair comparison for sure.
Yeah, it's difficult, especially at this level when they're really just they're still establishing themselves. You don't want to compare. Although I guess better to be compared to another minor leaguer than to you know a Hall of Famer or something like that. A little less pressure,
right?
Maybe
right.
Then. I don't want to put you on the spot, but maybe just do you have a chance to just a quick review of the minors? I mean, how are the teams doing? Are their teams struggling or are they holding their own?
I think they're holding their own. I think you have, you know, Springfield, they have, you know, we talked about Bader and DeJong, but, you know, they have a pretty veteran group. Memphis, they have a pretty veteran group. I think the younger clubs, they're a little up and down. And, you know, Peoria rained out tonight, but they've got some pretty good talent there. That might be one of the best teams with talent, with you know some young pitchers in Fernandez and Woodford and Alcantara, and then some you know obviously some young bats in Sosa and Sierra there too. So I think they're trying to find their spot. You know, kind of Palm Beach. I feel like it's kind of in the middle man there. They're you know they're in between, I guess, prospect levels, prospect stages.
Well, and you know they've got that. We've always talked about that hole. It seems to be filling up now. We're starting to come on the other side of that gap of talent, and starting to see some of these guys that are going to be knocking on the door pretty soon.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I think it was last year or the year before. I remember Derek Gould talked about the donut shape of mm-hmm. prospects. You had a good high and a good low. But I think you're right. We're starting to fill that in a little bit.
That's good. All right, well, that'll move us into our last section, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
Okay, we asked for Twitter questions this week and got a couple of them, and one it comes from our good friend Bob Netherton, who's at Cardinal Tales, and Bob does never limited himself to just 140 characters, but basically he wanted it starts out asking what we do when John DeFeralta comes back. Basically, what do we expect from Peralta? What do you do with Diaz? What does Tejada happen? What does Greg Garcia? All this stuff about first base. All these things that are kind of up in the air anyway right now, although they seem to be settling a little bit. You throw a healthy Peralta in the mix, and that seems to shuffle everything around again. Let's take this once at a part at a time, and what would we expect? You know, Johnny Peralta, last I heard, you know, they're talking about like an early June return, which seems like pushing it to me, but I'm no medical doctor. What do you expect Peralta if he comes back even before the All-Star break?
Here's what I would do, and, you know, I would imagine we're probably pretty close on the same page. And, you know, I think the best spot for Peralta, you know, Diaz has struggled at shortstop, so maybe you put Peralta there, but I would look at maybe Peralta at third, Diaz at short, and maybe move Carpenter to second or first, if depending on how Adams and Moss do. But then again, Diaz has had his struggles at shortstop, but I don't know where else he plays on the infield. What would you do, Daniel?
You know, I mean, first of all, I'm not 100% sure what we're going to get out of Peralta offensively because, you know, I see what happened with Yadier Molina and Thumbs last year. I wonder if he's going to struggle, but I also know you're going to play Peralta when he comes back.
Right.
I kind of feel like I might put Peralta at short and maybe have Diaz at second because, I mean, assuming he can handle that. And, you know, I feel like, you know, you're sliding down the defensive spectrum. To my mind, if you can play short, you should be able to play second without too much change. I mean, if Skip Schumacher can come in from the outfield, hopefully you can shift over from second. But, again, he's not necessarily know how much he's done that. It might take some work. But, again, he's struggling somewhat defensively. Not again, doing better than he was, but I think that would be my feel. But then again, on the other side of that, you know, you just gave Colton Wong a 5-year contract.
Right.
I mean, you got to let him play at some point in time. I mean, I know he's struggled some, and I don't know how you fix that, but I mean, you can't sign him to a 5-year contract and then bury him. You know, you saw what happened. You know, you signed Alan Craig to this big deal, and a year later you trade him. If you sign Wong to a big deal and either trade him or bench him for the most part, you're not going to be able to sign anybody to a long-term deal coming forward, I don't think. I think people are going to be a little burned.
Right, and you know, I think we kind of got lucky with the Alan Craig situation, able to get anything in return, and we got you know some quality innings from Lackey, and then you know a quality minor leaguer in Corey Luttrell. But I think you're right. You know, Colton Long's going to have to play too. He's going to have to get his at bat. So maybe, you know, going off what you said, maybe I don't know a platoon at second with Diaz and Wong. You know, we're assuming that Diaz is going to come back to earth a little bit. Because, you know, if he keeps it the 380 mark, I mean, he's going to, you know, you're going to have to play him, you know, a lot. And so, again, we talked about this earlier, the depth of this team, especially when Peralta comes back, it makes for some tough calls.
Yeah, and of course, I just look, and as soon as we start talking about Diaz, he goes and hits his sixth home run of the year. So, proving that we're going to have to keep him in the lineup. Now, you know, maybe it becomes a situation where, you know, you move Carpenter to first and you trade an Adams. Because Matt Adams is hitting, I don't know. He's hitting better than expected, I think, right now. He's kind of come on lately. And I think if Adams can build up some of his value, although he's going to probably have to hit a few more home runs to do that, you know, maybe you'd go ahead and trade him and you move Carpenter there and you put Peralta at third or, you know, or Diaz at third, and that way you can still play Wong. You know, I don't know that that's the way you really want to do it. I think Carpenter is more valuable when he's not playing first.
Right.
But, you know, for the pieces that you have, I think that's possibly an option.
Yeah, I think, you know, Matt Adams is pretty close to, if not at, you know, his peak. I mean, he's, you know, 799 OPS. That's pretty good for him. So I think if you're going to trade him, you know, maybe sooner rather than later, but then it's hard to say because we don't know what we're going to get with when Peralta comes back. So if he keeps playing at this level, you know, he may be the first one that gets chopped and see what's out there. And you're right, Matt Carpenter should not be the first baseman ideally, but, you know, if we have the good Peralta comes back and he hits and Diaz keeps hitting, and, you know, I don't know, Wong turns it around somewhat, then, you know, put Matt Carpenter at first, and you have a pretty solid infield offensively.
Now, I think it's almost a given right now that Ruben Tejada is going to be waived whenever Peralta comes back. I mean, we haven't seen much of Tejada. I don't remember seeing him much lately. Now, I haven't watched as many games, or at least not to the full extent that we have been, especially with these late night games, but it doesn't feel like we've seen him much. Greg Garcia, I didn't realize until reading like today, you know, Greg Garcia was hitting, it was 6-for-10 before he got sent down, and everybody's talking about how do we send down the 600 hitter and all that. Well, he's like 6-for-48 since he's been sent down to Memphis. And I don't know if that's a mental thing or if, you know, he just, you know, got hot while he was in St. Louis. But, you know, I don't think he's really pushing to get back into this mix, especially as we were talking about it. It's such a fluid thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're talking about what we're going to do with Tejada. You know, Garcia's like the next level. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where you would put him. And, you know, he's had his moments for the Cardinals, and, you know, he's, you know, done the job up and down. But I don't know. You know, injuries are going to have to happen to get him back up, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously has value in the major leagues, and he may be a situation where at some point in time he winds up in a different organization, but you're right. He's way down on those list of options right now, and you know, if you could have a 40-man roster all year long, sure, you'd have him up, but they tend to frown on that. Dan Buffa, of course, formerly of this show, and of everywhere else on the internet, asked the question, who should Cardinal fans be more worried about Randall Grichuk or Colton Wong? I'll let you go first and see if you've got a strong opinion on that.
That's a tough one, man. I'm gonna go with Colton Wong. I think partially because of the contract that's there, and what do you do there? And you know, I've never been as high on Randall Grichuk as many. You know, I think the strikeouts have always been bothersome, and you have some center fielders, some pretty strong center fielders in the system that may be better defensively with Bader and Charlie Tilson, better defensively, not better offensively, obviously, mm-hmm. but Jeremy Hazelbaker, he's slowing down a little bit, but I think we know what we're going to get from Randall Grichuk. I mean, he's not going to hit 30 home runs. He's going to strike out. I think the problem for me has been Wong, and I've expected a lot more from him, and I don't know. I don't know what's happening there. What about you?
You know, my dad, I still remember him. He was a big Grichuk fan after watching him come up. I guess it was a couple years ago. Really felt like he was a ball player and all those kind of things. I've always felt that Grichuk was a little bit overrated. I mean, he obviously had the power. Like you said, he's going to hit. I mean, if you were going to pick out a Randall Grichuk, I would say, 250, 260, and
right.
maybe 20 home runs, maybe.
Yep.
And if you get that, that's great. I mean, that's obviously got value. And he's kind of in line for that. I mean, his average isn't there now, but, a good hot streak, and he'll be there. I'm with you. I worry more about Colton Wong. I mean, the whole idea of, I don't know the whole idea, but a lot of the idea of giving him that 5-year contract was the idea that he needed mentally to have that security, to know that he was, valued and loved and all that kind of stuff,
right.
and that would relax him enough to come out and hit. And we just haven't seen that this year. I mean, he'll come in spurts, but those spurts are farther and farther between. And I the first couple of years you could blame it on Mike Matheny, trying to play Mark Ellis and things of that nature, but now, I mean, Colton should know that's his job if he can hit. And he doesn't even have to hit all that much to keep it. There's not, Jed Jerko is the closest thing to competition, and Jerko is not going to be, out there every day. So I feel like he should be doing more. And we, like I said, we saw a triple from him tonight. The man has, I think, the quickest hands. I mean, to see him pull, when he gets the bat around and hits one deep, I mean, he comes through the zone so quick. You feel like he could do more, but it just doesn't seem to be clicking, and that's very worrisome with that 5-year contract.
Yeah, and just taking a look at his numbers, he's got two extra base hits out of 17. He's got a triple and a home run, and his walks are a little higher than average, and his strikeouts are a little bit higher than average. Nothing too crazy. I'm hoping there's a little bit of bad luck so far, and that, he's going to turn it around. 213 batting average, 307 on base. I mean, that's not good for, to put it pretty simply. We talked about this earlier. I think he has to keep playing.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully there'll be some turnaround there.
Yeah, and I mean, he is still young. He is, I mean, although he may not be as young as I think he is, but if, I feel like he is. I know he's younger than me, but everybody else is too.
25. He's 25.
So,
yeah.
See, I mean, there's still a couple years before you hit what's typically the prime, 27, 28 years. So, I mean, there's still some things of trying to figure it out. But, we've seen so many good things out of him. It just feels like, we know it's all there. Will it ever come together? And hopefully it will. I don't want to write him off just yet, but it becomes harder to put him out there on a regular basis and let him figure it out. Now, if this Cardinal team does wind up being a 500 team, then the second half of the season they may be able to do some of that and not worry too much about, let people play and try to get figured out, because they're not going to really necessarily be pushing toward the playoffs. Hopefully that's not the case. But it may be. If you got to pick one of the two, I think you pretty much know what you can get with Grichuk. It's not going to be as much as we've seen in the past, probably, but you don't worry about that. You just know what it is. But Wong, and again, locked down to that contract, I think that's where the worry comes in.
Right, and, you know, kind of taking a look deeper at his numbers, he's not hitting the ball very hard. His hard-hitting percentage from Fangraphs, 14.8%, that's down from 27% last year. So he's not, you know, maybe not squaring up on the ball. He's not getting solid contact. And, you know, historically he's in the 20s. So, you know, if that number comes up, then you'll see his other numbers come up, I think. You know, that's something to watch.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I've always felt that he can hit the ball very hard.
Right.
And comes, like I said, quick bat, but it's just not happening this year. All right, and then we had a question from STL Matinals. In a cage match between the two of us, who would win? I think you're going to – I'm going to give you that one. although I think we're both smart enough to know that we're not going to get into any kind of cage match type situation.
No, I'll tell you, I have a 7-year-old daughter, and she plays softball, and I'm the pitcher for the team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after a night of pitching, I come home, and I'm pretty sore. And so, I don't know. We'll go toss up on that. I don't know.
I threw for my church league softball not too long ago. I think I've told you. And yeah, it was about 3 days later. I was still having trouble lifting my arm. So yeah, we're nobody's pick for some sort of pay-per-view matchup.
Maybe on the opposite end of a comedic performance.
So that perhaps we can do. All right. John, do you have anything, any kind of topic rant thing you want to do here at the end?
You know, I think I'm going to take this week off, Daniel. I think, we'll see after, three wins against the Angels, we'll see how we're doing. You know, it seems like it just keeps slipping away tonight. I know by the time people hear this, the game will be over and whatnot, but it's not looking good so far. Just hoping that we could string together some wins after, a pretty strong series on the other side of Los Angeles.
I want to, and I kind of referenced it at the very beginning, I do think we want to talk a little bit about Trevor Rosenthal. And it's such a topic that could go on forever, so we'll hopefully not do that. But obviously, last year, 2 years ago, Trevor was one of those Jason Isringhausen types that put the running run on base every time, got out of it, and put up 40 saves by giving everybody heart attacks. Last year, much better, much more controlled. But we're seeing it this year. We're seeing that flare back up and to some very, very strong extremes, as we saw in Anaheim. 5 batters walked in an inning worth of work over 2 games, that second game. He walked 3 batters on 14 pitches and got pulled, which is a little bit surprising because it is Mike Matheny. Where do we start thinking maybe it's time to start, at least working somebody else into some of those ninth inning situations? John?
Daniel, you there?
I am, John.
Sorry, I had it on mute. My bad.
Oh, okay. Well, right. I would mute me too, so that's fair.
I was muting me, actually. So I was saying his strikeout percent is a lot higher, and I don't think that's a good thing in this case because his walks are a lot higher too. So maybe, I don't know if he's overthrowing. I'm definitely not a pitching coach to see there. And, fans may be fooled by his ERA, 1.64, but Fangraphs has a great stat. FIP, FIP, fielding independent pitching, which kind of takes out non-controllables for a pitcher, and he's a lot higher at 3.46 there. So there is some cause for concern. Through 11 innings, are we at the point? I don't know if we're there yet, where we need to make a change, but it is something to watch.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't, you're not going to pull that, pull him out of that spot just yet, but I do think that it's going to be, like you said, something that they ought to monitor a little bit. And maybe he has a quicker hook. I mean, again, it's Mike Matheny, and we saw him with Adam Wainwright last night. We've seen him with others.
Yeah.
He tends to want to give his players a win or a save or whatever.
Right. And I think he's going to, you know, he's going to probably go too far. You know, it's going to be, it's going to come, if a change is needed, it's going to come to the point where we're like, okay, right, you know, something needs to happen. I, you know, it's going to be a while. You're right on the Matheny part.
Yeah, I mean, we'll figure it out before he does. I think it seems to be the case, as we've seen in the past. And but, you know, and like I said, maybe it was just a rough little bit, but the command doesn't seem to be there. And like you said, maybe he just needs a breather and a chance to figure this out. But I'm hopeful that, you know, there's a lot of good guys that have ninth inning experience in that bullpen, which is good.
Right. Yep.
And so if they need to, they could shift to that. But, you know, hopefully he figures it out. I think it's kind of interesting, and I mentioned this in my blog post today. You know, this post off season, we really expected, and at least I did, the Cardinals to sign him to some sort of extension, being that he was, you know, arbitration eligible and all that kind of stuff. And they signed him just instead to the 1 year deal. And I'm wondering if maybe they had an inkling that they just weren't 100% confident in that he was going to be able to continue to be a dominant guy going forward.
You have to wonder, you know, what their philosophy is on paying relievers. Mm-hmm. You know, we have, you know, there's some pretty good arms in the system, and you know, how much do you go for a closer? You know, the money ball theory is you let him go, and you have someone, you know, the next man up kind of thing. And so, you know, I don't think we're going to see, at least I don't know, I would assume, and that he's going to get a big contract. I don't know. I don't see how you could do that. You know, they didn't pay, you know, C-Shack. They didn't pay, who's the guy that went to Houston?
There
you go. They didn't pay either one of those guys. And I don't know. It seems like their philosophy on relievers is you know, build from within.
Mm-hmm. And that's very reasonable. I mean, relievers have a shelf life of 3 or 4 years, it seems like, for the most part. I mean, there's always that outlier, like a Mariano Rivera or somebody like that. That can do it for a long period of time, but for the most part, it seems like, you know, 2 or 3 years, and then a guy's just going to bounce around and not necessarily be affected. And we're seeing that with Seth Maness, you know, that same kind of thing. I get why they didn't have just a little bit. It was a little surprising at the time, just, you know, a guy with 240 save seasons, you think you lock him up. But it's hopefully, perhaps, it turned out to be a good thing. I mean, the Cardinals have not had some bad luck with relievers signing contracts, Jason Mott, Jordan Walden, both signing 2 year deals that basically were washes.
Right.
So maybe they're being a little more hesitant. And, you know, again, they stockpiled a lot of closers in that, both in the major leagues and some guys in the minors. They don't have to keep him around. But yeah, we're going to see. We'll see. And speaking of people maybe staying out there too long, Michael Wacha finally gets out of the fourth at 6-2, as we start to wrap this up.
Real quick, Dan. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of going back to Rosenthal, and this is something that, you know, is kind of maybe a big thought to think about. But you know, you saw over the off season what closers got on the trade market. You know, Craig Kimbrel was dealt twice, you know, from Atlanta to San Diego and then San Diego to Boston. And both times they got pretty good packages. You know, I don't know if Rosenthal makes the turn, if that's something they think about, especially, you know, if the other guys in the system, you know, the relievers develop, but something there maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I mean, obviously, he's got to get more in line with what he was last year than what we're seeing now. But I would think that's perfectly valid.
Especially if we fall out of the race, you know, that might be something to think about to build some more from down below in the system.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals haven't been sellers, ever. I mean, really, since Walt Jocketty came into town, there's even those couple of years that were off years, you know, they either stayed in the race late enough or just didn't really do a lot of selling. So it would be a little different, but I wouldn't rule it out, and I wouldn't say it's a bad idea, even if they're in the race. I mean, like you say, you've got Sechrist, you got O, you've got Broxton. You know, if Walden comes back, which seems to be a real big if now, but if he came back, you know, you got guys that can close this out. So even if Rosenthal is doing well and they're in the race, you know, maybe that's where you go and use that chip to to get a major league piece and a minor league piece, you know, if you can. I don't know if you could or not, but it would be something. I think Mo tends to be a guy that thinks of everything, even if he doesn't pull the trigger on some stuff.
Right.
And so I'm sure that's at least somewhat on the table. All right. Well, this week, like I said, the Cardinals have the Dodgers this weekend, as we're seeing that first game tonight. I have two more with them. Then they have the off day. Then they go back to Busch Stadium, where they'll be playing the Rockies for three. We'll come back at you late next week, and we'll talk about how they've done over this stretch, and hopefully a little bit more excitement about what they've done.
Yep.
But we'll have to wait and see. Yep. For John Nagel, I'm Daniel Shoptaw. Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!